Well, this morning we have finally come to David and Goliath, covering these stories of the scriptures. If you're wondering where we're at, this is week 38. I didn't think it'd take us 38 weeks to get to David and Goliath, but we made it, okay? We're here. I decided, though, yesterday that if it was still raining this morning, I was changing it to Noah's Ark again. I just figured that might be appropriate if we changed it. But we got that was a wonderful rain. I knew it was really a good rain when I went to drop off the hawks at where they'd be staying. We're driving down the dirt road, and there's a duck just hanging out in the middle of the dirt road. I said, okay, you know it's a good rain when the duck says, forget the pond, I'm just going to be in the middle of the road. So anyway, it was a good time. But turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. We're going to be going through this wonderful story, a story that I'm certain probably almost all of us are familiar with. We've heard maybe a million times. But I'll tell you this, I'm surprised how many Christians don't actually know what the scripture says with the story. We usually just hear the kids' version of it, or what it may be. No, we're going to get the whole account. We're going to try to go through this whole chapter today, getting the whole account. How it's going to start off, verse 1's like this. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Socah, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Socah and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. Now before we talk about those places, let's have a word of prayer, okay? Lord, I thank you for the moisture you did provide. What a wonderful good rain, and Lord, we can already tell that's a blessing to the ground. And Lord, I pray this morning as we get into your word, I pray that you might shower its blessings upon us, that we might be prepared for this week. We might be prepared for life and what you want to do in us. So Lord, just please work in us. Be our teacher as I ask every Sunday. In Jesus' name, amen. So this is located, here you go. Got to get our map up here. This is located in between Philistine territory and Judah. Jerusalem's right here to kind of give you a barrier. The Dead Sea be right over here on where the banner would be, basically. So this valley runs right through here. This is a gateway into Philistine territory. I mean, this is like a highway going through there, okay? Here's a picture of the valley. This would be looking towards the south. This would be where we believe, right around the area where the Israelites camped for the battle, okay? So this is probably the view they had. The Philistines would have been camped most likely somewhere around this hill, right here, okay? They're going to camp. They're going to meet in that valley. This valley is very green. I zoom in on that part right there because there's a winery there today. It's a kind of a famous winery in that region, part of the area. It's very fertile. It's a good place, not just for transporting between Philistia and Judah, but also it'd be an agricultural place you'd want to control at that time period. There is a brook that runs down it. It's dry part of the year, but as you can see, this brook is still full of rocks to this day, even after probably millions of pilgrims have taken rocks from that place. I can't tell you, if you Google the Valley of Ella, okay, which is where this is at, you'll just see pictures all over Google of people picking up rocks. And I'm thinking, man, I'm not surprised I wouldn't be surprised if somebody was selling them there. You know, have a rock from the same brook that David took the rocks from. I don't know if anyone's doing that, but it's still there to this day. It's an amazing place. Here's how it's set up, though, okay? Verse 2. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the Valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side while the Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. So this is how it's set up. The Philistines invade. They camp in one spot. Israel comes in with Saul, the king, leading them. They camp on the other side, that brook dividing them. Okay? That's how we're set up. Now, let's keep reading. Then a champion came out from the army of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. If we use standard measurements, there's different kind of measurements for this. Remember, a cubit is generally from the tip of your finger to your elbow, which is about 18 inches. A span is about from when you have your hand fully spread out from the tip of your thumb to the tip of your pinky, which is usually, you know, it kind of varies. But long story short, it comes down to approximately 9 feet 9 inches is how tall Goliath is, okay? To give you kind of a size reference, you can look at these side walls going up here where the roof meets the walls there. That's about 9 feet 9 inches, about 10 feet, okay? So that kind of gives you an idea of how tall Goliath probably is, all right? He's a big guy. Let's go ahead and keep reading. I was hoping that Brian Cayley would be here today. I could use him as a reference. I do that all the time with that guy. Next thing, says he's from Goliath, he's 6 cubits in a span. Verse 5, he had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. That's approximately 125 pounds, if you were wondering. okay? In this world today, we have some guys that are over 8 feet tall. They have one of those diseases where they just keep growing. But when they get up that tall, usually they have a hard time walking. They have a hard time moving. Not Goliath. He's 9'9", and his chest piece is 125 pounds. And scale armor at that time period was designed to be lighter and for mobility. Okay? So he has scale armor, state-of-the-art tech made out of bronze that was meant to be for mobility on the battlefield. 125 pounds. You getting the picture? This is a big dude, okay? Next bit. Says that he was, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. Verse 6, he also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam. In other words, meaning it's very thick. And the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. So his spear's made out of iron. Said it's a weaver's beam, most likely meaning, as I said, it's very thick. It's larger than a normal one. There's some other thoughts on that, but I think that's probably the main one there. It says the head of a spear in the Hebrew, that references a flame shape. Okay, so it's not just some crude little spike at the end of it. It's designed very special. It's flame shape, and it says that it weighs this mountain shekels, which comes to about 15 pounds. Okay, now 15 pounds doesn't seem as much as 125, but have you ever had weight at the end of a stick before? I mean, that's a lot heavier when it's at the end of something long like that, and he can use it with ease, we believe. Now look at this next bit. So one thing we often forget. His shield carrier also walked before him. So what happens in this story? Goliath comes out, huge man with state-of-the-art technology. I mean, he's got the bronze on. The Israelites wish they would have had bronze. They wish they would have had iron. When Saul first came to the throne, it says that there was not a person in Israel that could make or could make anything out of iron because the Philistines took all the blacksmiths and killed them. So they wouldn't be able to make weapons. So I mean, this guy's got the best technology. He's huge. He's got armor from his head down to his feet. And to add to it, his most vulnerable spot, his legs, he has a shield carrier that goes before him. His sole purpose is to block those legs. I mean, you look at this guy and you think, he's got everything. He has a spear. He has a javelin for long distance on his back. We're going to see in just a minute, he has a sword as well. This guy is decked out for fighting. This would be like me standing up against a Navy SEAL. I would stand there and just say, I'm just going to go home. You can do whatever you want, okay? Because I can't stop you. That's what I would want to think. This is what it would be like. It wouldn't turn out very well for any person that stood before him, we would think. But Goliath has a downfall. Let's look at the next verse. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, why do you come out? Why do you come to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us. Again, the Philistine said, and listen to this, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. So Goliath proposes, instead of all of us fighting together, a lot of Israel's army would have been made up of farmers with their pitchforks or a sword or maybe anything they had, okay? It wouldn't be a professional army. Saul had one, but it wasn't quite as nice as the Philistine one. So Goliath says, send your best guy out. We'll have a fight. Whoever wins, that determines the battle. Now, we have a lot of these actually recorded through history. And fun fact, few of them actually turn out as people expected. And by that, I mean they made an agreement. If this champion loses, then we become your servant, something like that. Most times the losing side doesn't honor it, okay? Why? Because they're still armed. That's basically it, okay? But they would have these contests quite often in the ancient world. Goliath's probably done a lot of these before, okay? He's been trained up from a youth, we're going to see in a minute, to do this very thing. I said before, though, he has a downfall. What is that? What it says in verse 10, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Goliath basically comes up and says, I am standing in opposition of you, Israel. Why is that a problem? Because God said, I'll go before you into battle. When you seek me, I'm going before you. And even if you're facing the biggest giants out there, when God's got your back, that giant doesn't stand a chance, right? Now, you would think with Saul, with that guy, Saul is the tallest man in Israel. He's just by a head. Saul's been king for 30-something years. He's got experience in warfare. You would think Saul would be able and ready to fight here, but he's not. Look at what it says in the next verse. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So what's going on with the ranks of Israel? They're just there shaking in their boots, okay? That's all it is. They're terrified. They do not want to fight. Here's where the story changes, though. It starts off 40 days later, we're going to see, verse 12. Now David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. The three older brothers of Jesse had gone after Saul into battle. And the names of his three sons who went into battle were Eliab, the firstborn, the second was Abinadab, and the third, Shammah. David was the youngest. Now the three eldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. And chapter 16 is where we're first introduced to David. And that happens when God says to Samuel, hey, I'm choosing a new king. Go, and you're going to anoint one of the sons of Jesse in Bethlehem. He goes down there. He sees it's David. David's first not even invited home when the prophet comes. Why? Because he's the youngest brother. He's least likely to be picked to become king. And he's got to take care of the sheep. He's got chores to do. But God chooses David. And before we could see, going back to chapter 13 things, God said he was going to choose a man that was after his own heart. Now, at this time period, we don't know David's exact age, but we're going to guess that he's at his upper teens, perhaps his lower teens, probably most likely mid or upper teens, 16, maybe 17 years old at this time period. And what he's doing is he takes care of the flock, and then whenever Saul is being terrorized by this evil spirit sent from God, David goes and plays his harp, his music for him, and Saul feels better about it. The spirit lets up, and everything's fine as David worships the Lord. That's what David's doing. So he already knows the king, okay? So keep that in mind as we come to what's going to happen here. Now, this is specific what's going to happen with our story. Verse 17. Then Jesse said to David, his son, take now for your brothers an ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp of your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander and their 1,000. And look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. It's been 40 days. This valley is just down the road from Bethlehem, so it just would be a quick day trip, not even that really. Verse 19, for Saul and all of the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting the Philistines. So David is basically now, again, being the youngest, he gets the short end of the stick. Hey, your brothers are too busy, guess what? You're errand boy today, David. Go do that, okay? So he's run to deliver this thing. Verse 20. So David arose in the morning and left the flock with a keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Before we jump to that, I want to point just one thing beginning of verse 20. Look what it says. He arose early in the morning. He didn't wait. When we've looked at these heroes of the faith, many of them, especially when they're acting in a godly manner, they got up early to get this done. They didn't wait. They didn't procrastinate. I think that's an interesting thing we should learn. When God calls us to do something, let's not procrastinate. The second thing I want to point out is, what did he do? He left the flock with a keeper. He didn't just abandon his job or let somebody else do it. He got a good shepherd to stay there and watch. What a great example we can have to follow there, okay? David comes, it says that he shows up when the army's going out in battle array. That means that they are lined up in their divisions and their platoons. They're ready to fight, okay? And this is as they're giving the war cry. So basically the idea is that they're down there, you know, getting themselves pumped up. We've all probably seen football teams before a game, you know, they're hitting each other and they're grunting, acting like men, right? We can imagine all these Israelite soldiers are there, acting like men, getting all pumped up. And then look what happens, okay? Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. Now David, he sees this going on and he drops off the bags with the baggage keeper and he goes, I got to go say hi to my brothers. You know, they're getting ready to fight. I got to go say something to them. So he leaves that bag, he runs down there, and this is what happens. And as he was talking to them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. So David's there. Now he hears Goliath's challenge. It's been going on for 40 days, okay? And on that 40th day, they're ready to fight again. Verse 24, when all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. Just imagine this, okay? You have this army of thousands of people. They've been ready for 40 days to fight. They're there, oh, you know, grunting, having a good old time, you know, getting ready for this fight. Goliath comes out and says, send somebody. And what's Israel do? They tail and they run. I mean, I'm just imagining David's got to be going, what in the world? What in the world's going on here? Okay, I mean, that's what I would be thinking. These guys were all ready to fight, and now they're just running away like this. David's really confused for multiple reasons, but let's look specifically at what he says. Verse 25, the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel, just like he said. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. So Saul's desperate. Saul is basically saying, any man that can go kill this giant, I'm going to do three things for him. I'm going to give them wealth, okay? I'm going to give them prosperity, is what Saul says. They're going to be wealthy because of it. Second, they're going to be able to marry the princess. What do they get? They get to enter into the royal family. They get power as well. And then the third thing, they'll be free of taxes, and they'll also be free of serving in the military. They can opt out if they want. What else do they get? They get prestige in Israel. Saul's saying, I'll give you power. I'll give you prosperity. I'll give you prestige. Just kill this giant, okay? Now, there are so many fairy tales where the whole premise is you get to marry the princess, right? Here, that's one of the things he's offering, okay? I mean, you would think that somebody would be brave enough to step up. But Goliath is so terrifying that for 40 days, no one in the professional army, no one in the leadership in Israel will step up and fight him. Goliath truly has to be a daunting sight. Now look at verse 26. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by, saying, what will be done to the man who kills the Philistine and takes this reproach away from Israel? So he hears this, and David goes, what's Saul going to do for the person that does it? Now, you can read that going like David's saying, what's he going to do again? Give me the numbers here. How much wealth? No. Which princess is it? Is it the good-looking one? Yeah, he's not doing that, okay? What he's getting at, you can see in the next verse, or next part of the verse. For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? In other words, he's saying, why does Saul have to offer a reward? That's what he's asking. David's saying he's taunting the armies of God. Why are we letting him do this? So David's not focused on the wealth or anything. He's simply just standing there going appalled, going, how come no one's stood up to him? God's on our side. Look at verse 27. The people answered him in according with the word, saying, thus it will be done to the man who kills him. So they repeat everything. Verse 28. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger burned against David and said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? Sounds like an older brother, doesn't it? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. In other words, David, why are you even here? You don't belong here. You should be back taking care of those few sheep. You just came here because you want to see the battle. You want to be a part of something bigger than yourself. Sounds like an older brother, I think. And I should know I'm the oldest brother in my family. Verse 29. But David said, what have I done now? Was it not just a question? Yeah, brother, sibling rivalry, right? Verse 30. Then he turned away from him into another and said the same thing. And the people answered the same as before. When the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he was sent to them. So Saul hears, there's someone who's willing to fight against Goliath. And I imagine Saul's going, finally, it took 40 days. And who comes walking in? David. Okay, David. Let's look what happens next here. When the words which David, or excuse me, verse 30. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Then Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth. Makes good sense. But David said to Saul, your servant was tending his father's flock when a lion and a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck and killed him. I read that and I go, David's got guts. And that's what I think when I read that. A bear or a lion comes and takes a lamb. My thought is, oh, that sheep's dead. I'm going to keep these ones safe. What does David do? I got to go get it. He goes out there, and how does he do it? I mean, like me, I got this amazing thing called a sling. I'm going to use that to get him to go away. No, David seizes it by the beard. I mean, he's right up there in its face kind of thing. And I'm going, David, you're either an idiot or you're extremely brave. Sometimes that line's kind of hazy, isn't it? David, though, he's giving not, he's not there bragging about himself. He's going to point this back to his first point he made with his brothers and the others around him. Look at what it says. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God. What's he drawing it back to again? He's drawing it back to God. He's taunting God is what he's doing. So I'm going to rise up. I'm going to do the right thing, and I'm going to stand up when nobody else will. Even though I'm not a part of the army, he's not old enough technically to even serve in the military yet in Israel. Okay, he's not of age. Yet he's going to be the one to go and do it. Verse 37, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, may the Lord be with you. I picture that as him basically saying, go in Godspeed, which sometimes is really nice. But oftentimes how that used is basically saying, I'm never going to see you again, so may God take you home quickly, okay? That's kind of what it means. I imagine he says to David, he turns to their guy and says, get a coffin ready. That's what I imagine Saul is thinking at this time period, okay? But he has to send him. Verse 38, then Saul clothed David in his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with his armor. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them. And David took them off. So Saul basically says, if you're going to go fight and you're going to represent Israel, you're going to represent me, you got to look like me. I'm going to give you the best Israel has to offer when it comes to weapons and when it comes to armor. But Saul's a head taller than everybody else in Israel. So guess what? It doesn't fit him. David takes it off, and he's going to simply go fight as who he is, as a shepherd. He's going to go out there with his shepherd's bag, with his staff, and with a sling that he carried around with him when he was taking care of the sheep. That's it. That's how he's going to go out there and fight. I just want to say this. We will never be fully prepared for God's calling. You can think, well, I'll go just as soon as I'm prepared, as soon as I'm trained, as soon as I'm ready. We're never going to be. What we have to realize is this. It doesn't matter what we have in our head or what we have in our pocketbook or what we have anywhere else. All that matters is if we have God with us, that's it. That's all we need. We're ready then. When God gives us an opportunity, don't postpone it. Step into it, step up, just like David did, and go as yourself. You don't have to pretend to be anybody else. Be yourself as you do. Be the person God has created you to be and desires you to be. So look what he takes. Verse 40, he took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. So he goes down, he gets those 5 stones from the brook. I've had people ask all the time, why did he take 5? I don't know why he took 5, okay? So if he had true faith, he only would have taken 1. I don't think that implies anything. He's going to go fight the giant anyway. And what we're going to see here in just a minute is he was only planning on using 1, okay? How David approaches this, he was only going to use 1 anyway. Now, there's some fun theories on why he brought 5 and everything. If you want to talk about those, talk to me afterwards, okay? We don't have time for that right now. David approaches, okay, and Goliath now comes up to him. Goliath's been waiting 40 days for a challenger, and now David, the shepherd boy, stands before him. Verse 42, when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. Ruddy speaks of being red, darker. Perhaps he had reddish hair. Perhaps he had reddish skin because of all of his time out there with the sheep out in the field. We don't know. It doesn't matter. Goliath looks at him and goes, that's a kid, and he looks like a pansy. That's basically what he's thinking, okay? It's basically what he thinks. The Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? Why does he say that? Shepherd staff, right? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. So he's bringing their false gods into it. The Philistine also said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. And I imagine as Goliath was saying things like that, that's why Israel was trembling, okay? I mean, that's a scary thing to hear from this guy, right? Look at David, though. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. There's that focus again. this day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. Calm down, David. And I will give the dead bodies of the armies of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth will know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. That's one of my favorite little speeches in Scripture right there. David stands in the face of this giant. He gets told this very scary thing right to his face, okay? He might be able to smell Goliath's breath as he's saying it. I don't know. And David stands right back up and says, I don't have to fear you at all. You come with a sword, a spear, and a javelin. You're going to fight me that way. But I have God right behind me, and he's the one who's going to deliver me and deliver Israel. And why does he say that? So that everyone will know that God is with Israel. See, David's not there thinking, because I have a great strategy, because I'm a great person, because I have this training, because I'm God's chosen one. No, he's going, because God said he's going to be with Israel. You've taunted God, you've challenged God, and God's going to rise up here. David's whole focus is, this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to do it, and I know God will take care of me. If there's anything we can pull from David in this chapter, it's that. When God lays something at our feet, don't worry about it. Don't worry about whether you think you're ready. Don't worry about how big the giant is. Don't worry about whether he has all the advantages. What do? You do what you know is right. You do what God has laid out, knowing that God has your back. David goes as far to say that I'm going to take your head from you. What a claim. What a claim. Verse 48. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David. Note this. That David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. So he's thrown down his staff at this point. He's got his sling out, and he charges Goliath. Okay? Now, again, from a strategic standpoint, you have a ranged weapon. What do you want to do? Stay away from the guy. Don't do that, right? Don't think of that. I can remember hearing a story about in World War I where they were getting very desperate to break that stalemate. In the trenches. I remember hearing a battle once where they said, you know, instead of us firing bullets, what we're going to do is we're all just going to charge. We're not going to fire a single bullet. We're all going to charge in. And the soldiers said, we're all going to die. And most of them did. I mean, they said that was absolutely foolish not to use your ranged ability when you had it there, right? With David, you'd be thinking, what's he doing charging it? He's going to run straight at it. He's not afraid. Remember I said before, why did he grab five stones? Well, it wasn't because he thought he was going to use more than one. He's charging him. Okay, he runs up close. He's going to get a shot on him. Look at verse 49. And David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it. So again, I want to notice this. He's charged Goliath before he even put the stone in the sling. I mean, like, I'm no person that's been in the military, but I imagine your commander says, before you charge into battle, make sure the gun is loaded. I mean, it just makes sense. David doesn't even do that. He charges headlong in, okay? It says, and he slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. David slings that stone. It hits the one place he's really vulnerable, right there in his forehead, knocks him out, basically going to kill him right there on the spot. Can you imagine? He falls down, okay, on his face. Now, I just want to point something out. This is a Joshua thing. It says that a shield carrier went before him. The shield carrier is not mentioned again after this. Says he fell on his face. So my thought is that Goliath, who's this giant man covered in armor, he falls on his face forward and that shield carrier becomes a pancake. That's what I think. Okay? He killed two birds with one stone. That's what I think David did. Okay? And you can say, Joshua, that's crazy. Yeah, maybe it is. That's a Joshua thing. That's not exactly what Scripture says. Okay? Anyway, the shield carrier's out of it as well. It keeps going though. Okay? The story keeps going. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him, but there was no sword in David's hand. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew it out of his sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Okay? Here's the thing we usually leave out of the kids' books, which I think is okay. Okay? He pulls Goliath's sword out, which again, all his other weapons are scaled for him. So I want to imagine that sword is probably scaled to him as well. Okay, this would be a big sword for David. He decapitates him right there on the spot. He's entirely dead. Okay? Now, I mean this lightheartedly. But whenever I watch a movie, whatever it is, and someone dies off, I say to Kathy, I said, they're not dead till they take the head, okay? I can't tell you how many movies and books I've seen where someone supposedly dies, but they don't come back. But in all the books and movies, you take the head, guess what? They're dead, okay? Where do I get that premise from? 1 Samuel chapter 17, okay? I get that from David. Take the head, you know it's over, all right? So he takes the head, it's over, he's won. What do the Philistines do? They're not going to honor the bargain to become servants of Israel. What do they do instead? They run. They tail it back to Israel. Why? Because if this little boy can take out this giant, boy, what's the rest of the army going to be able to do? They're thinking. So let's go ahead and keep looking. Verse 52. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley, to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Shaaraim, even to Gath and Ekron. The sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. Then David took the Philistines' head and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his weapons into his tent. So Israel chases them down. The Philistines abandoned all their tents. They left all their wealth. They've been there for 40 days. They got supplies. They got wealth there with the king and everything. They're all left. David has not just provided a victory over the Philistines. He provided this great income and wealth as well when they come back. Now, let's look and see what happens next. Now, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistines, so this is before the fight, he said to Abner, the commander of his army, which is also his cousin, by the way, Abner, whose son is this young man? And Abner said, by your life, O king, I do not know. Now, remember, David's been in his presence, but he goes, I don't even know whose son this is. Why does he want to know that? Well, one, he's going to honor the father. But remember, what was one of the things laid out that they would get? His father's house would be free from taxes and military service. So he needs to know that, okay? And also, it's just going to draw back that he is a descendant of Jesse. Why is that important? Well, because David's line is going to be the eventual line from which Messiah comes. So they're going to trace that line back, that lineage back, okay? Verse 56, the king said, inquire whose son this youth is. Verse 57, so when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. Oh, I forgot this map here real quick. Look back up here again. They fought here in this area. It says they ran all the way to Gath and Ekron. Those are the two closest Philistine cities. So they run them all the way back into their territory, okay? They have no more land they can take from Saul at this point, okay? They're outside of the land. So Abner brings David to him with Goliath's head in his hand. Okay, proof, all right? Next verse. Saul said, verse 58, Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? And David answered, I am the son of your servant, Jesse, the Bethlehemite. Black screen, in scene, credits roll, okay? That's how that ends, okay? I mean, you can just picture it. I've said for years and years, if some good Christian TV producer, they could make an amazing story, you know, take this, just the Bible story about David, make an amazing series out of it that teaches so many lessons. But how does David's story begin? It begins with a young man that by all accounts you'd say there's no way he should be fighting in this battle. There's no way he should even be here. But what happens? He's the only one who will step up and say, this is what is right. And I'm not going to be afraid of how big he is. I'm not going to be afraid of what technology he possesses. I'm not going to be afraid of the tactics that he has. I'm going to run headlong at him. And I'm going to trust God to give me the victory because this man has challenged God. So oftentimes in life when challenges come our way, when things challenge our faith or whatever it may be, we get automatically on the defense. We say, oh, okay, well, yeah, we're going to have this fortress mindset. We're going to stay here in the church walls. We're going to keep it there, nothing else. No, that's not how David operated. David stands there appalled going, how come nobody's doing anything? We ought to have that same mindset. When we see something that needs to be done, when God lays something on our heart, guess what? God's put that on your heart. God's put that opportunity before you. Take it. Take it and know this, God's got your back, and if God's begun it, God will finish it. But also know this, you can have a church family that has your back as well. For David, he knew that army was behind him, but he wasn't relying on them. But I want to tell you this, when it comes to things of faith, that's why we gather for church services. That's why we have a church family, and so we can support and hopefully not have to do this alone. Sometimes we will, but most of the times we do not. So I also want to encourage us with this. Let us take advantage of the resources God has given us. The first one is his presence, the Holy Spirit that dwells within us. But the second one is this. It's our church family. If you haven't taken the time to try to get involved with the church family, interact with people here, and I'm not just talking Sunday mornings, I'm talking outside of Sunday mornings. Tonight's a great chance to do that. We're going to come recognize our seniors. We're going to come have some wonderful ice cream, a good time together there. Another great opportunity is Vacation Bible School. You say, well, I got to work. Well, guess what? Friday night, we have our closing program. Come then. You can even swing by for an hour. Get involved with the church family that God has placed here in Snyder and in this community. And we actually make up a lot of different communities here in Snyder from all over the place. And I think that's a wonderful blessing, a wonderful thing. David's beginning is this. Completely unexpected. Nobody thought he could use this. He's the youngest son. He's a shepherd boy. He's a musician. He's good looking. He looks like a pansy. How's God going to use him? David goes on to be one of the greatest kings Israel's ever seen. And to this day, David's legacy still lives on. And it was to David that God is going to make the next set of covenants with Israel and for Israel. Covenant, a covenant that is still in place and a covenant that is still yet to be fully fulfilled, but will be someday. These next few weeks, Lord willing, we're going to go through David's life. We're just going to hit the highlights of it as we go through it, okay? So I pray that as we go through it, we can learn some more things about this amazing man named David, who was a man after God's own heart, yet was not perfect. Let's go ahead and close in prayer. Lord, I thank you for this time. Lord, I thank you for the courage that David had. Lord, I thank you that his courage wasn't from anything of himself. His courage, Lord, is from what he knew about you. Lord, you prepared David for that time period. You helped him to take care of bears and lions while caring to the flock. And Lord, I thank you that you prepare us for the things in life. But Lord, even if we feel unprepared, we're never going to feel fully prepared. Lord, thank you that we know that when you call us to it, you're going to see us through it. So Lord, I pray that we might live with that boldness, with the bravery of David. And Lord, I pray that we might stand up, that when we see that no one else is standing up for what is right, whether it be amongst family, friends, co-workers in our country or wherever it may be, that we would stand up with bravery, knowing that you have our back when we're doing the things of you. Lord, I pray that we would be able to take these things to heart, that we would learn from them, and myself included, I do pray. And Lord, guide us as we continue on talking about David these next few weeks, that we might just learn about this man and how you used him. And how you used him to change Israel and the world. In Jesus' name.